In this episode of In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics, we catch up with the offensive line guru, Jim McNally, offensive line coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. He was the line coach for both Super Bowl teams in 1981 and 1988. Nobody knows more about offensive line play than Jim McNally, and he is a character. You're going to love him. You're going to love what he has to say about the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line. Jim McNally, coming your way. He still breaks down tape for offensive line coach Frank Pollock and is kind of a consulting assistant to Frank Pollock. So any success that the offensive line sustains and generates this year, Jim McNally, be a part of it. Welcome to In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. We're in our beautiful studios at First Star Logistics, and very special guest, and I mean very, all capital letters, Jim McNally, the offensive line coach for both Super Bowl teams for the Cincinnati Bengals, Super Bowl 16, 1981, Super Bowl 23, 1988. The best line coach in the National Football League, still mentors a lot of line coaches in the National Football League. Welcome, Jim McNally.
Thank you, number 62, Dave Lapham from Swampscott, Massachusetts.
I don't Wakefield, think Wakefield.
Wakefield, but it's somewhere near the water. And absolutely. And a graduate of Syracuse University and one of the first guys to try out my Jimmy Jammer.
The Jimmy Jammer, yes. That was your invention. Tell everybody what the Jimmy Jammer was all about.
Well, the Jimmy Jammer, in fact, Dave, without boring you, I have a replica here of the Jimmy Jammer
right prototype? Here. Wow.
You see that right there? I am an inventor.
That's the patent.
This is the Jimmy Jammer inventor. All the specifics of it right there.
Wow.
And
nice.
I have to pay like $2,000 a year to renew it. So I only did it once. But anyway, the Jimmy Jammer was a contraption where the coach, me, would stand and I would be, let's say I'm standing and I would have a device where I could move a moving bag or shield. Yep. And then I could pop it and it would go forward. So the blocker would stay in front of the shield. Then it would, when it would come forward, they'd pop it with their hands, like punch it, boom.
Yeah.
And they'd move, boom, boom, boom. So it was kind of a timing thing. And it was a pretty interesting device, other than the prototype weighed over 2,000 pounds. So there was only one of them. You know, to manufacture it would have taken an arm and a leg. So I think it's still under the stands at Wilmington.
Wow, the Jimmy Jammer, that's classic. Coach, you had some unbelievable teams, unbelievable run. I don't think there was an offensive line coach that had his guys prepared more than you. I mean, you took so much time in breaking everything down and every possible thing a defense could do. I remember going into games thinking there's nothing they can do that we haven't talked about. And that's a credit to offensive line coach Jim McNally. I mean, your thoroughness, your attention to detail was unbelievable.
Well, what I did before all this technical stuff was we'd look at the film and I'd write down every move the defensive guy made. And then I would give that to the players. What I didn't do quite as well as say, okay, this guy does you could look at all my notes and you'll say, wow, this guy does this 50% of the time. If I had really been a great coach, I'd have said he does this 50% of the time. And then this is what you do exactly to stop it. You know what I mean? That's where you become a good coach, is not only where you identify the issue, but how to solve the problem, which I think I became a little bit better later on in my coaching.
No question about it. You coached some great linemen, led by, in my opinion, the best to ever play the game. The legendary Anthony Munoz is going into the Ring of Honor. Best player Cincinnati Bengals have ever had. The only Hall of Famer as a player. Paul Brown, obviously, in the Hall of Fame as well. And those two guys are going into the Ring of Honor because they are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What about Anthony Munoz? First thing that comes to your mind when you hear people say Anthony Munoz, coach?
Well, the first thing that I come to my mind would be what we did in our meeting room, actually. And I think it might have started maybe when you were there, maybe a little bit later. I would put the name of the guy that Anthony Munoz is going to play against. Now, he might play against two or three different guys, but the main guy, I wrote the name up, and then I took my eraser and I just erased him.
Yep.
Because, we felt that he would erase him. Now, there were a few guys that would give him a little trouble for three or four snaps a game. I mean, he was a dominating player. But occasionally there were a couple of guys that we had to work a little bit on because, I mean, you know, he normally dominated his guy. If there were 70 plays, he blocked them 70 times.
Right.
So, like I say, there were some occasional Bruce Smith or Sherman White. Was it Sherman White that did play for the Bills?
With Buffalo,
the Bengals at one time?
Yep,
yeah.
Sherman White,
yeah. He was a tough guy. And then Freddie Dean.
Yep.
So not every game was a piece of cake, you know what I mean? He had to work at it, but generally he beat his guy 99% of the time.
No doubt. And you talk about finishing, you know, that's always a separates the men from the boys. And Anthony Munoz would finish people. I mean, just devastate people, pancake them, throw them around, embarrass them. Is he the best finisher you've ever had as a lineman?
Yeah, he's the best finisher because he was such a good athlete. He could glue to the defender,
right,
and they couldn't get away from him. So I think his athletic ability, along with his is what made him a great finisher. If you're not a good athlete, it's hard to finish the blocks because the defensive guy is shedding you, olaying you, trying to get rid of you. But Anthony was such a good athlete, he could glue to the guy. And then when the guy would go to make the tackle, he would just give him that last shove and they'd end up on the ground majority of the time.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. So his running mate in both Super Bowls, the other part of the Mexican connection, Max Montoya. Now, Max Montoya, don't mess with Max Montoya. If you mess with Max Montoya, that's your first mistake. Max will choke you out. I mean, Max Montoya, that was one tough dude, man, as well as a hell of a football player.
He was a good football player. He was a good pass blocker. He was a good run blocker. He could pull.
Yep.
He very rarely was defeated. I mean, I think Anthony gets a little more credit because he was playing tackle and left tackle, first round draft choice. I think Max was an eighth or a ninth round draft choice. He was already at the Bengals when I was there. He was there. It was his second year when I came in.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was probably one of the most improved players I ever coached. Because as a rookie, he played a little bit and was a little raw and green. And then he turned into an outstanding technician.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yes, he was seventh rounder out of UCLA.
Yep.
Max Montoya, and just unbelievable player.
And he didn't know a word of Spanish. At least that's what he told me. I think he was just kidding me. Because I figured that him and Munoz would be talking, you know, behind my back in Spanish. Max says, "Hey, Jim, I don't even know any Spanish other than hola or adios."
Oh, man. So those Super Bowl teams, pretty obviously big memories for you. Just came up a little short. 49ers have two Super Bowl rings that we'd love to have here in Cincinnati. But those football teams, pretty darn good offensive football teams. And it started in the trenches, started up front, and that's where, you know, you did your work. And I'll tell you what, it was sight to behold a lot of times. You got a bunch of guys to buy in, and five guys became one. Actually, seven or eight guys became one and played really well for you.
I think the first Super Bowl that the Steelers were still pretty good. You know, they still had that great team. And what I remember most about the first Super Bowl is beating the Steelers, I believe, more times you were there than they beat us.
Yep.
In the second Super Bowl, the Steelers were a good team, but they weren't as dominant at that time. You know, there were other, you know, the Buffalo Bills at that time were more competitive, I think, as far as a team that we had to beat going into the playoffs and so forth. But I remember those early years, the wins against the Steelers. In fact, I think when the Steelers won a bunch of those Super Bowls, that they always had trouble with the Bengals, even before I got there as a coach. Yeah. And you played on those teams. And I think Mike Webster mentioned one time, he says, "I hate playing against the Bengals."
Yeah.
So anyway, with that first Super Bowl team, beating the Steelers, who were a very, very strong team with Bradshaw, and I think he was still playing when I got there. And, you know, the Joe Green and Greenwood and all those guys, Jack Ham, that was a big deal for us.
No question. No question about it. I guess that takes me to let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Bengals just win in Pittsburgh, and that season, 1981, we beat the Steelers 17-10, like second to last game of the season, to clinch the division, and people went nuts, man. They were just all over the airport when we landed, you know, on the buses, and all, it was like a Hollywood scene. But and we beat them on the road to clinch the division. Beating Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh for this football team was a big deal, a big boost, a division win on the road. What did you see? Because you do tell first, before we get into that, tell everybody what you're doing for the Cincinnati Bengals organization still to this day.
Well, what I do is, for example, this is a chart. We're not going to get too specific about the chart.
Right.
But if you can see in the chart at the top, it's got a guy's number. Okay. In fact, I'm going to go over here. You can see the number of the guy over here. And uh-huh. then the play is down on the side of the number. And then he makes a particular move that I have a chart. And then I do four games. And what's all said and done, I put all of these different moves together, send them to the video people. And then they make a video of the defender. And you can see every time he does a certain move over and over and over and over again. You can see every time he gets double teamed, every time he makes a particular pass rush move. So if you're a player, you can watch the guy you're playing against, just him one-on-one doing the same move a number of times, then the next move, then the next move. And that's pretty much it. It's kind of tedious work, but that's pretty much what I do. Now, I think Pro Football Focus does something like that, mm-hmm. but I believe that I try to zero into a little bit more specific technique of the defender.
Frank Pollock says that you're a massive help. You know, he uses the information that you give him, he said, is invaluable. And he mentioned you after the game. I did an interview with him for radio after the game was over. And he said, man, you're going to talk to McNally anytime soon? I said, you know, as a matter of fact, Coach is going to be doing a podcast with him. He goes, I'll tell you what, the information he puts out is helpful, very, very significant. So you're well appreciated still, Coach. And with that said, Pittsburgh Steelers, even without T.J. Watt and some of the people that were nicked up, that's a pretty good defensive football team. I know you've probably looked at the tape of the Bengals' performance against the Pittsburgh Steelers in their 24-10 victory. How do you think the guys played up front?
I think they played well. I think they're improving. I think that is it Jackson is his first name, Carmen?
Jackson Carmen, correct.
Yeah, he did well at right guard.
Yep.
I know this from watching the tapes of training camp and all that. that they have some backup players that are going to be great. Okay. Not just good, but great. In fact, they got one guy that's on IR. I think he's on IR. And he played a little last year. He's got the sweetest feet I've seen in a long time. His name is Hakeem Adeniji.
Yep.
He's from Kansas, I believe.
Sixth round pick from Kansas. Yep. Yep.
When he gets in there, I don't know what position. He can play guard or tackle. He has got terrific athletic ability. And but like I'm saying is they're improving. It was a good Pittsburgh team. Obviously, they're not quite the same without J.J. Watt. But, I mean, he's a one-man wrecking crew.
Yeah.
But again, we still did well. We pass blocked well. I think the quarterback had quite a bit of time. I don't think he – I don't know how many times he was sacked. There weren't very many times.
Zero.
Zero, yeah.
Yeah.
They broke, it was that. And,
Coach, they broke a record. Pittsburgh had a sack in 75 straight games, an NFL record.
Yes.
And it got broken yesterday. Bengals.
Zero.
No hits on the quarterback. No sacks, no hits on the quarterback. They only threw it 18 times, and he completed 14 of them, so that says a lot right there.
Well, they have a terrific quarterback. I mean, there's no question that Joe Burrow is as good NFL quarterback as anybody on any team. He may not be quite the runner that Mahomes is, or the kid from Arizona who's a phenom, the number one. I mean, Murray, oh my God. But he's mobile enough. I mean, he's not a stiff back there. But I mean, I would say as far as accuracy and a young quarterback, he's as good as any. I mean, you know, he threw a couple of interceptions the week before, but that'll happen. You know, he's only going to get better and better and better. His receivers were terrific. That Tyler Boyd, he made a couple of plays that were, he ran over a guy one time. And, and then they got his teammate from LSU, number one. I think things are looking up. I know the defense is a lot better too.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, defensively, they played really well. And you mentioned Jamar Chase. I mean, this kid, he's got 11 catches, four of them are touchdowns. And, you know, he'll go deep now. I mean, he's a threat. He'll vertically stretch that football field, and he's averaging over 20 yards a catch. He's one of three receivers in the league that's averaging over 20 yards per reception. So he's off to a great start. What do you think of Joe Mixon? I mean, Joe Mixon, when he's in a groove, is he about as good as there is?
I think he's probably as powerful as there is. And he's got good moves, too. I mean, he can make you miss and this, that, and the other. But when he gets ahead of steam, if he gets a little crack, I mean, maybe there's a linebacker that's free and everybody isn't perfectly blocked, but he'll run right over him and gain an extra 2 or 3 yards. So as long as he stays healthy, I think it's a good combination, mixing the pass with the play action, you know, faking him the ball. Absolutely. Yeah. He is a big guy. I mean, I bet you stand next to him. I bet he weighs about 235. I don't know. You might know more than I do, but I think he's a good 6'2". And he's a powerful man.
He is. He's put together now. There's absolutely no question about it. So we talked about Pittsburgh coming off that big victory and how they, you know, they ran it 24 times, threw it 18. They only had 42 plays, Coach, and they scored 24 points. That's efficiency. On the flip side of it, Pittsburgh's got the ball 80 plays. They only scored 10 points. You know, that's a credit to the defense. You mentioned the defensive improvement. I think the defensive line has been a strong suit. I mean, it's been the thing that shined in the first three games of the season. What do you think when you watch those guys on tape?
I don't know all. Some of them are new, but I know that Ogunjobi.
Ogunjobi, yep.
Because I used to do him when he was at Cleveland.
Yep.
And he was always a pain in the fanny, you know, trying to block him. And he seems to be making – quite a few plays. And I think they got some new linebackers in there, don't they, too?
They got some young guys.
Yeah, they got some young guys in there, but they look good. I mean, and the Pittsburgh's got a brand. I mean, you talk about a team that's changed. They were talking about the LA Rams that had a whole new coaching staff. The Pittsburgh Steelers got a brand new offensive line. I mean, all five of the guys are gone. Villanueva's at Baltimore. The left guard, I believe, retired. I think the center retired. DeCastro, they cut him. And yep. I think the right tackle is the only guy that was left from last year. So they've got some rebuilding to do in that area also.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I think the teams, I think the team to really beat in our division is Cleveland. Yeah. Okay. And Baltimore's good, obviously. They got that great quarterback. And, yep. You know, they always have a good defense. But, I mean, Cleveland, they got those two defensive ends, Clowney and Garrett. I mean, they're both Hall of Fame potential players.
Yeah.
If they're in the game at the same time and they're coming at you, and then they got probably the two greatest running backs in the league on the same team. So I would say that that's the team that you got to beat to win the division.
And they got a very solid offensive line coached by Bill Callahan. I know.
And Scott Peters.
Yeah. Scott Peters. Yep. Yep.
Both of them. Two great offensive line coaches. So that'll be an interesting game.
Yeah.
You know, obviously stopping Lamar Jackson at Baltimore, but watching that, I'll tell you where Cleveland is good is that quarterback. They run that wide zone play, and then he keeps it on the nakeds, and he is a great athlete, and he's very accurate. So, like I say, I think if you can get by Cleveland, you got a chance to win the division.
So let's talk about this upcoming component, short week. What was it like to have a short week to play on Sunday and then have to play Thursday night? Tough on the players, obviously, physically, but the short week preparation, trying to compress everything into, you know, 3 days as opposed to 5 or 6. What was that like for a coaching staff?
Well, I think most of the time it was just more a walkthrough. You know, it was like a jog through. I mean, you didn't really put the pads on and hit. You had a lot of meetings. You had a lot of walkthroughs. You did a lot of team time, not quite as much of an individual time. And you tried to prepare by looking at the videotapes. And, of course, the other team's got the same problem.
Right.
And I think the NFL is like everybody else. It's a copycat league. My point is that I don't think there'll be much that our guys haven't seen or been exposed to through preseason or through these first three regular season games. I think if you were going to play a team that had a totally different offense and defense, let's say a team that ran the wishbone, which they don't in the NFL, or they ran the zone read over and over and over with all the multiple things, you would have an issue. But I think the teams that run, you know, kind of basic offenses and defenses, I think it's just a matter of getting your rest, getting the players that are injured healthy, and studying the game film.
So, Coach, this Jacksonville team lines up in a base 3-4 like Pittsburgh did, but they morph into 4-3 and nickel packages.
Okay.
And I mean,
it's
all over. How similar, how much of a carryover schematically is there from what Pittsburgh did to what Jacksonville has shown on tape that you've watched?
Pretty much the same. Jacksonville uses a little bit more of an even defense because I think people put a little more nickel personnel on the field,
right?
Like three wide receivers, and then that makes them take out one of their run defenders and put in and most everybody when you're in a passing formation, you know, like three wide receivers, They put a man on one guard. They put a man on another guard. They got two defensive ends. I think it's more the trickery of the blitzes that you have to be prepared for, whether it's Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, whatever. I think it's more studying who's got who. You know what I mean? You got three wide receivers, and they've got an overload defense to the left. Who blocks who? Who does the back block? So I think most of the week will be spent on issues that the defense gives you.
From a personnel standpoint, where is the Jacksonville Jaguars' strength of that defensive football team?
Linebackers. Their linebackers make most of the plays, okay? Particularly, I think it's Miles Jack.
Yeah.
And number 41 is Jared Allen. Yeah. Right. Those are when I did all my studying and I would go through who was making tackles and this, that, and the other, that the linebackers were the ones that seemed to be the real good athletes, avoid blocks, run around blocks. Of course, if you can get to the linebackers, you've already made a couple of yards. But, you know, their defensive linemen, they got a big nose guard, number 52. His name's Hamilton. But he's more of a run stopper, a bull rusher, and they really don't want him in passing situations. So I think that the threat of our passing game will be more four down linemen and maybe some exotic blitzes like you'll see every week to try to stop our quarterback.
Coach, you'd be a good one to ask this. You know, there's been an evolution in the game, obviously. But to me, it seems like today's NFL, these athletes on the defensive side of things are so unbelievable. They're so freakish. It seems like there's more and more of a gap between the athletic ability, therefore the performance of defensive fronts as opposed to offensive lines. I mean, there's only a handful of offensive lines that you'd say, oh, you know, boy, there's 3 to 5 offensive lines that you really – but all these defenses, I mean, every single week you're going against these big freak studs inside and these edge rush guys that are just size-speed ratio ridiculous. Do you see that gap widening between defensive players and offensive players in terms of in the pits?
Yeah, you do, because when I watch a lot of these running plays, regardless of the team, whether it's the Bengals, it's the Chargers, it's whoever it is, it's the running backs that seem to make the longer runs, the long runs. I mean, the offensive linemen are trying to block their guys, they're zone blocking, they're double teaming, but somebody always comes free. The defensive linemen are better athletes than the offensive linemen. Now, occasionally, all right, for whatever reason, a college or two will put some great athletes on the offensive line. However that happens, who knows? Maybe the kid's always been an offensive lineman. But it almost appears that your offensive line almost has to be all first-round draft choices to even semi-sustain the blocks on these guys. So most of the runs or most of the yardage that's made in the running game is made by the running back. I mean, the running back may give credit to the O-line, or our O-line block good, or, you know, this, that, or the other. And that may be the case, that everybody's trying hard, they're working, they're tough, they're whatever. But the linebackers are so quick and the down linemen are so athletic that you could only sustain the block for so long. So it's almost like you take the Cleveland Browns. They got two great running backs.
Yep.
That when you watch their film, maybe 60-70% of the time, somebody is makes a miss and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's incredible, the disparity in athleticism and, you know, physical talent between the guys in the defense. And it's always been that way, but it seems like it's more universal and it's increasing. You know, it's just these guys are just tough to block. Coach, can't thank you.
It's the scheme, too. Everybody's pinching, slanting the line. They don't just sit there like, okay, this guy's going to sit right over me, and he's going to be there all day long. They're slanting, they're looping, they're twisting. It's almost like they're rushing the passer on every play. You know what I mean? And if they, if you get them out of position, you might have a long run.
Yep. Yep. It becomes that old guessing game a little bit, you know, hit it right. And you can crease them pretty good. Can't thank you enough, Coach. Appreciate your knowledge. Appreciate your time. It was good catching up. And I know we're going to miss you on Thursday night. I know you just had some surgery. You're rehabbing that hip, and make sure you take care of your health, take care of yourself. We're going to miss you on Thursday here in Cincinnati, Coach.
Hi, Dave Lapham here. Have you heard about In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, presented by First Star Logistics? Catch new episodes from the world of sports and broadcasting. Search for In the Trenches with Dave Lapham on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.